Hi everyone. Welcome to Webinars Unfiltered. Sorry, I got a little notification saying there my microphone appears to be noisy. I'm just really excited to be here with both of you. Okay, so Webinars Unfiltered, it's a new thing that we're going to try here at Workcast, where we're going to be tackling some quickfire questions on any questions that we see on public forums online, instead of us trying to create topics that people might not be interested in. We want to go out there, find out what people are chatting about, and answer them from a Workcast perspective. We're going to do very short ones to begin with, and then if we do hear back from any of our audience today who want maybe bigger answers, longer answers, how to on certain things to deep dive, we can completely do that. So before we get started on today's questions that we found, let's go to our lovely panelists who I've brought with me here today. So Hopper, I'm going to go to you first. Tell us who you are, what you do, and why you're here today.
I am Chris Hopper. Thank you, Natalie, for that introduction. I'm the Sales Development Manager here at Workcast. I am charged with connecting with all you lovely people who want to understand more about webinars. And I basically help you out, grow your webinar strategy, then help push you through as potential client of Workcast. So yeah, a great job being Sales Development Manager, and I am so happy to be here as well, Natalie.
And over to you, Rachel.
Thanks, Natalie. Hi, everyone. So I am Rachel Charlton. I am Head of New Business and Marketing here at Workcast. I have been Workcast for approximately 7 years. It's getting to the point now where I do forget the amount of years I've been here and part of the furniture. But yes, so I predominantly work with new clients at the moment, introducing the platform to them, speaking to different clients from different industries. So we do get to see and hear a lot about different strategies for webinars. So yeah, I am looking forward to answering some of these questions. I'm definitely used to answering questions on the hoof and having to think on my feet, but I am excited to do this. Actually, it's nicer doing things on the hoof, I think, as opposed to having been fully prepped for something. So I am looking forward to it.
Yes, because we usually have these, like, a lot of our customers fully scripted, so we know a general direction that we're going, so it's going to be interesting what we have. And before I forget, I should probably introduce myself. Last but not least, me. I'm Natalie. I'm the marketing manager here at Workcast, and I work with these lovely two people here. I don't know if they're going to be on that side of the screen, but here we go. I've been here for, I want to say, coming out to 4 years, so it's a lot of experience coming that with us little group here. So hopefully we can help answer some of these questions. Okay, you lucky two that are here with me today. I'm just going to read out the initial part of this question that we found to give a little bit of context to why they're asking these questions, and then we'll dive right in. Sounds good?
Yep.
Good. Cool. Perfect. Cool. Okay. So this person is saying, "Happy Friday, everyone. Today is my thinking day, and I'm hoping you can help me. My company offers video production services, and I'm doing some research to see if there's an opportunity to tap into the webinar market. The problem is, I don't know if what I have in mind really has any value at all. I was hoping I could gather some input on how you use webinars, and I can provide you with input on your challenges where I can in return." Okay, the questions that they have, number one, if you use webinars, do you see your use increasing or decreasing over the next couple of years? How often do you publish a webinar?
Interesting. Do you want me to go first, Chris?
Yeah, you can go first. Yeah.
Okay. So if you use webinars, do you see your use increasing or decreasing over the next couple of years? And how often do you publish a webinar? I think, again, it depends on a few things. Depends on your industry. Depends on the webinar program. Depends on the webinar goal. Depends on your budget. Because you can use webinars for a multitude of reasons. You can use them for lead generation and product demos. You can use them for sponsorship and revenue sources. You can use them for education, for example, CPD, CPE. So the frequency depends on your use case and, again, the outcome. Some webinars can be really, really high-end, high production, which will take a lot more time and take up a lot more resources, which would argue that you actually do less and spread them out a little bit more. Or you can do them on a bit more of a churning out basis. So, for example, you could do product demos, which you may want to do multiple of those per day. You may want to even tap into using Simulive options to do that sort of event. And that means you can churn them out a lot quicker. So again, I think without major context to that question, although tapping into the fact that that you are in video production services, I would probably lean to the former that I discussed. But depending on who's listening and what you're interested in, I think it will depend again on the industry, the purpose. Both options are available across all different platforms almost. But I would think one of the key drivers behind the frequency is budget as well. So I would bear that in mind.
Mm-hmm. 100%. What about you, Chris? What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a lot of variables attached to that question. Mm-hmm. I think from a resource standpoint, if you can increase the number of webinars that you are, as long as you get like a main objective of like what you were actually wanting to do with webinars, and then you've got your goal in mind, and increasing that capacity of webinars is always going to be a good thing in terms of, if it's for lead generation, you can always use that as like bringing in like new potential prospects, analyzing that data and analytics of the attendee, really understanding who they are in that demographic, so you can always try and expand on your own marketing efforts. That's one of the key benefits of webinars. For video production services, I would definitely say reaching out to clients and giving them the option of webinars, and just seeing like expanding in the value of like what they bring, how other clients have used them in the past, and what real value as can they bring to your like the revenue source, the marketing activities. There's so many different benefits through webinars that we can obviously go through in a lot more detail for this. But for a quick short fire answer, definitely, if you have the resources, definitely try and increase your number of webinars. So that is only getting more and more popular.
Perfect. And my little take on that is to kind of tag on to what you said, Hopper, about resource. I think really think about consistency. If you're going to start webinars, think about how often you can do that, because once you start offering it, if you drop off and maybe do one or two, people might notice. And think about what you're able to do. So for example, we try and do one every month, and we try and stick to that just to offer consistency to our audience. Okay, number two, which is more challenging, the planning before a webinar or the recording of the webinar? Rachel, over to you this time.
I would probably say both can be fun as long as you're organized. I think challenge is an interesting word. It just comes down to organization. I think the challenges or the opportunities that you might come across when you are planning is just to make sure that you pin down your speakers and you pin down some rehearsal time as well. Matching up people's calendars, depending on how busy people are, that can sometimes be a challenge. And if you don't get things in like that, then that may have a knock-on effect to the quality of your webinar. But don't feel pressured into thinking that that's what you have to do, because essentially, if you have speakers who are fluent in speaking, then if they do have to do it on the hoof, then it shouldn't really be an issue. The confidence will be there. I would say the actual broadcasting of a webinar is probably the easiest, because you've got no option at that point but to just do it. And it will be over within, say, 30, 45 to 60 minutes. I think short answer to that one would be probably the before and the logistics of it. But yeah, in terms of the actual planning or the setup, it should be easy, just as long as you stay organized and to a timeline.
Mm-hmm. Hopper, what do you think about it?
I did actually think the recording was quite difficult for when I do
my jaw to drop there.
But when I do my own recording, like, I always feel a little tad nervous about like speaking and getting my value across. So I'm pretty good at like demonstrating the value and having that all on paper. But then having that flow into a presentation format where I'm just actively speaking to the group, that can be a bit nerve-wracking for me. So one of the key features that we use here at WorkCast is Simulive, which is we can already put out pre-recorded video content. So we record our own webinars, and then we can go live at the end as well to answer any questions, which I think is a really great tool that we use. And I definitely make the most out of that, because I've made a few mistakes throughout presenting my webinar, and then I can obviously just re-record it, and then at the end, I've got a full presentation with exactly how I want to articulate my whole presentation. And then I can go just live to answer any questions in a bit more detail. So I definitely see the challenges from both perspectives.
Yeah.
For me personally, it's the recording, but we're always there on hand to help out anyone who does have any issues with them both aspects.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can definitely see both sides. I think from a marketing perspective, where you're using them for like lead gen, thought leadership, things like that, I would definitely say the planning. Purely just because coordinating all the people, getting, yeah, like, as you both mentioned, getting dates nailed down, it could be quite a tearing your hair out moment, which I think everyone can relate to. Okay, number three. What's the number one specific challenge you face? There's no other part to that. Maybe it's what's the number one specific challenge you face with webinars?
One of them, from a sales aspect, I get loads of people doing, like, coming towards me with various challenges, what they faced. And one of the ones I've actually came across recently has been in relation to recording pre-recorded content and having that go live. So they might all want to have speakers in a room together. They might want that content recorded, or they might all have content that they're distributing at certain times. So it's trying to put that all together and have them all played at certain times. So I've had loads of people come to like that challenge of how can we get our content all in one place, all recorded, and then we can just go live at the end to answer any questions. And that's what I've seen quite a few people reach out to me about, yeah, and trying to understand that, how Simulive works.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say that's probably the number one challenge I'm seeing companies facing right now in terms of the webinar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Rachel, what do you think about that?
I'm going to bring it back to just to this question specifically, I think, in relation to the person asking the question from a video production service perspective. I'm going to go down the route of budget. I am a salesperson at heart, and budget does tend to drive a lot of the conversations. I wouldn't like to put a percentage on it because it does differ depending on the time of year, again, industry and the persona that you're speaking to. But especially if people haven't done something before, they either underestimate the costs of production or overestimate, which is obviously what we want. But if they underestimate, mm-hmm, you just want to make sure that you are being abundantly realistic, especially at point of qualification of somebody's requirements. So the number one specific challenge you would face in terms of webinars, I would say, is budget. And the other reason why I would say budget, and I'm trying to remember the context of this whole question, is also the finding of a platform. And because there's so many platforms on the market, and it isn't a case of comparing apples for apples, you're comparing apple to a banana, to a peach, to a pear. Everyone hosts differently, everyone has different numbers of registrants versus attendees versus number of templates versus what they include for branding, then reporting, then APIs and integrations. And sometimes I do believe that the challenge for people is finding the right platform that they will suit and they will fit right. I would actually say I'm going to go with that being my number one challenge as opposed to budget, because, yeah, I'll move away from the sales. But I think, yeah, I think it's finding the right platform that suits your requirements. But as long as you speak to a sales rep and they're a good sales rep, they'll do the qualification right and they'll tell you whether or not you are suited to what they offer.
Mm-hmm. I think you know you are talking to a good salesperson when they turn you down rather, yeah, than the other way around.
Yeah, I agree.
100%. Because you want to make sure you're right for each other. Otherwise, yeah, it'll only, yeah, end in heartbreak, unfortunately.
Yeah. And full transparency, most companies want, they want recurring revenue as well.
Exactly.
They don't want to missell their products to, mm-hmm, people. Either, so yeah,
100%. From my perspective on this question, I'd say the number one specific challenge you could face, I would say, this kind of goes across those different industries, would be getting the registration numbers that you're wanting. So you need to think about how you're going to promote that, who you're going to promote that to, because I think it's very easy sometimes to say, I'm going to do this many webinars a year and I'm going to get this many registrations. And then when it comes to trying to get those registrations, I think a lot of people are hit with a bit of reality of like, oh, that's actually, it can be quite difficult to achieve what you initially set out to do. So I think maybe going with a clear plan of what you want to do there initially might help you in the long run.
I think it's just to that point as well, Natalie, experimenting with things as well, because we can find that our registration numbers are affected purely just by the content that's on a registration page or the name of a webinar as well. That can affect registration numbers. So yeah, think about the broader picture of a webinar, as opposed to, unless you want it to be really niche, think about the broader picture, I think.
I agree. Okay, moving on to number four. Are your webinars recorded live with participants or pre-recorded? Should I go first? Because I'm not going first yet. Okay. So at Workast, we try and do a mixture of live and semi-live, which Hopper talked about briefly before. There's a couple of reasons for choosing each. So live, we would typically choose if we know we can get the presenters at the same place at the same time, and if they're all confident doing it live. As Hopper mentioned before, like, some people are a bit nervous doing it live. They're like, oh my God, what if I stumble? What if I forget what I'm saying? So I would say that live is sometimes maybe good for people who are confident, as Rachel already said. And I do think that sometimes live attracts more registrations, because I think there's the thought that you'll get more one-on-one time with a presenter, rather than thinking it's on demand, pre-recorded, and you won't get that extra layer of value there.
Creates a sense of urgency as well, doesn't it?
Exactly, especially if it's not available afterwards. And then in terms of pre-recorded, so semi-live, we will use when, almost for the flip of the live, if we can't get people in the same place at the same time, if they're potentially not as confident, and maybe we want to polish it a little bit more. So post-production aspects, so if we want to edit the webinar a little bit, add some imagery in there that we maybe didn't do initially that we wanted to come back to, or even maybe subtitles that we want to add in that we couldn't do with live. So the accessibility element of that. So that's what I would say from my perspective. Hopper, over to you.
I do see the huge benefits in doing the live presentation. So you can really engage with the audience during that process. So we do have a feature called the engagement wall, where you can, if your webinars are very much more laid back and you just want to really showcase your personality, the engagement wall is a really good tool. So people can like share GIFs, they can really connect with your presenter there and then, and you can really just flow more efficiently with the audience throughout the presentation, which I think a lot of people miss, like when they're going live, instead of having pre-recorded. Because when you are going live, you really do, you understand a little bit more about like, all right, is people really vibing off what I'm seeing? Have I got the energy that's really bringing out like the questions? So you can obviously grow yourself as like a presenter in that live environment, but also understand your audience a lot more through the tools like Engagement Wall, like I said. But short answer, yes, both.
I muted myself. I was too slow to unmute myself. Rachel, what are your thoughts?
So it's an interesting one, because I feel like this goes into the second the question after this, sorry, which, if you don't mind me reading out, Natalie, just because Chris, you touched on it quite a lot, is if live, do you use any interactive features like Q&A polls or displaying viewer comments? The reason why I'm bringing that up as well is because live and semi-live, that they can be used exactly the same way. And I'm just reading the question back again, because I need to sink in, but are your webinars recorded live with participants or pre-recorded? Again, we can go back to the semi-live element of things as well. So you can pre-record a webinar, you can pre-record a webinar that has participants and then push it out as semi-live if you want to, again after the event. You can record or you can host a webinar live without any attendees, because you just want them to record it again for the purpose of semi-live. But it's an interesting question, because you can, whether your webinar is live or whether your webinar is pre-recorded, you can still engage with the audience. You can still have participants there. Pre-recorded, again, can sometimes come into play if what you're talking about needs to be, for example, you are within the pharmaceutical industry and your content actually needs to be vetted before it's allowed to go live. It needs to be approved before going live. So that's again an example of something that is pre-recorded but then pushed out as live. So it depends, again, it's so industry specific. If you are going to do, let's say for example, let's say, without naming clients, I'm trying to think of a B2C. Let's say you're an association and you are rolling out an event that includes CPD accreditation. But what you also want to do is allow people to engage with each other and share best practices. Then something like what Chris mentioned before about open chat with audience members and presenters really, really helps create that community feel and brings a lot more value to that event. Again, you may use webinars to do annual or quarterly financial updates to shareholders and stakeholders. They tend to be live because those figures can change seconds before you go live as well. But then equally, if you are pitching to investors and using a webinar to pitch to a large number of investors, you may not want things to be as accurate because actually you're building a nice picture of your company. And again, that could be pre-recorded because you may not want to rely on your local connections and on the day of this really important webinar. Again, you can still let them engage. You may not want to go down the open chat route. You may want to actually use moderated Q&A because you want to almost vet and pre-read those questions that come through first and before you answer them on a live broadcast. And again, in that way, you may want to do a live introduction, then play out your pre-recorded content, your presentation, and then switch to a live outro where you can answer those questions, whether they be open to everyone to see or whether they be moderated and controlled by yourself as well. Again, I feel like these are long-winded answers to these questions. So many variables and so many options depending on the use cases. It's a tricky question to answer in terms of doing it live with participants or pre-recorded. It just depends on the nature of the event, I think, as well.
No, I think it's okay giving a bit of a longer answer when it could be any industry that you want to chat to here, because there are so many different options, and I think that's both a blessing and a curse.
Yes.
In some cases, the reason I was scrolling there is just when you're talking about open chat versus moderated chat, I'd seen some of the other people's answers to this, and someone had said something along the lines of, never do open chat because people will ask silly questions on the day. So this is, for example, someone who wants moderated chat. They want to be able to screen things before it's even put to their presenters, so they can really get to the core of what they want people to ask on the day. So it's just interesting to see what you're saying here, like matching up with what other people are saying as well, which is why I was smiling to myself. So since we've kind of touched on question five about using interactive features, we're just going to move on to the next one after that. So this one almost kind of links to that in a slightly different way. So it's, do your webinars typically include slides? I know everyone has opinions on slides, especially, I'm just going to bring it up here because people could find out about it. Anyway, cloud slides, like people, cloud slides, slide share, thoughts, opinions.
Yeah.
Lay it on me. What do you both think?
I was just going to say that I definitely think people are still drawn towards the slides, the slide format, because it does give you, it's an easy to read process of like information. You see a lot more, you see a lot of pharmaceutical companies showcase like research that way, because it's easier to understand. It's easier to showcase charts instead of like from a video element. But you are seeing a lot of people incorporate that video element into their slides as well. So that they might start off with some video and then go into a PowerPoint presentation, which makes it a little bit more engaging as well for the for the audience member. So they can, but they're still getting the meat of like the of the content through slide format, which is great, which is a great process, really. Short and sweet, that's what I'm gonna say now.
I should really caveat all of this, like preempt this with like a short and sweet. You have 30 seconds to answer.
Just have a little timer.
Just I for, should, just and then it'll ding when your time's up.
Yeah. Just for the audience's take on it as well, we did try and say, like, we're going to keep these to, like, four-minute answers, so I'm trying to bring us back down on the time so I can get the value in.
I'll go next on this one. So, Hopper did mention a lot of the things that I thought of. I do think that slides / pre-recorded video do have a place in almost every webinar, and I only say that because they can be used as just a way to control the narrative, even of a panel discussion. So if you're changing topics, a slide can say what that next topic will be. And it's just a nice change in visual, instead of just seeing people sit there all of the time and awkwardly moving from one subject to another, you can actually interrupt that awkward exchange with a slide of the next topic. And similarly, you can have a nice intro video and a nice outro video as well to webinars. But again, you don't have to have them. That's probably a personal preference of me, and just from seeing some of what our clients do, it really looks nice doing it that way. But again, it's circumstantial. It doesn't have to happen. Just in my opinion, it looks nice.
What I'm taking from this, Rachel, is that if I don't go and edit this afterwards. I'm taking
this is just cute and informal and nice and a good chat, but
good chat yeah, good banter.
We should have had slides, that's what we're saying.
Question two.
We did call this unfiltered.
Exactly. And this is what I mean. So when it just makes it a little bit more formal, but because this isn't necessarily formal, it's unfiltered. Yeah.
I should do a theme song for this. We're all singing unfiltered in different tones. Where are you? We'll chat about this later, Hopper, because time is of the essence. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the next one because I feel like you both answered that quite well. I don't need to chime in on that. So number 7, again, perfectly kind of links to what we've just said. What editing do you do on them afterwards? How do you repurpose them? So I guess that kind of echoes what we've all said. Mm-hmm. You can edit them afterwards if you want to polish them. So rewind a couple of minutes. You'll hear Rachel talking about adding different slides in between if you want to. If you want to switch to, I don't know, fades between people. It depends what year you want to operate in.
I think as well.
Whoever speaks first gets it.
I was going to say. Going back to the video production services nature of the question, that will probably dictate how much this person will want to edit. They may want to add supers, name tags, again, intro videos. So it's a question that comes out to you. If you want to do a webinar like us that's unfiltered, you don't need to do any editing. Leave the bloopers in. I've got a dog asleep on my lap right now, so he might pop his head up shortly. Who knows? It completely depends on the nature of the webinar / webcast / live stream / whatever you want to call them in 2024. That's my short answer.
Hopper, you have 10 seconds.
I was literally going to agree with Rachel there, so I completely going to speed of quite this. No, but I just wanted to add on as well. I think if you do feel like you've missed something out of value in what your presentation was, you can add different things into a resource section as well. So you can really get the most out of that.
Yeah.
Like a PDF document or something that might like the audience would find valuable related to that content. I just wanted to add that in there because it's not just editing the content, it's editing the outside of the webinar as well, like the resource section or the registration or the follow-up email. If you can get that right as well, then they're not just going to get the content there, but they're also going to see the value in them part as well.
In terms of repurposing as well, sorry, Natalie.
Go for it.
So a webinar like this would be really well repurposed. That was a lot of R's and W's. as a podcast, because we aren't including a lot of visuals with it. So you've got to think again about, you know, the past however many years, and I don't ever foresee podcasts dying a death anytime soon. So repurposing anything like a panel discussion in particular as a podcast is a brilliant idea. A lot of people are already doing it, so it is something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Adding really quickly to that, repurposing it as blogs for your website. So it was video production. Mm-hmm. That could really help you with SEO, especially if you're maybe doing what we're doing here, where we're just going answering questions that people are asking. We're not coming up with these. Yeah. And if other people are looking for this as well, that could really help boost your website in terms of organic traffic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also for social, snippets for social. I think that's also important. Yes. Okay, final question, people.
Woo!
We made it.
Jinx.
Oh, God.
I think I won that. I'm not just competitive at
just
all.
Just out of cute, just if anyone's wondering, this is actually 90% of how we talk in the office and like when we're with each other.
It is. And we love it. Okay. Final question. Do you get your webinars, upload them straight to YouTube, or a combo of both?
Both.
We don't upload them to YouTube per se. We don't, but you could. Mm-hmm. That is the purpose of this. You could do that.
Yeah.
It's getting your brand out there, really, when you're uploading them to YouTube as well. So people can just like stumble upon a question from your from your webinar, and it could be there, so people can find your brand. I know we don't really go the YouTube route because we don't receive like any of the data and analytics for the attendees, so I feel like we could be missing out in that aspect. So, but when you are doing like webinars for lead gen purposes, having a registration process, which something that YouTube would lack, then you're trying to get the most out of it, really, in that aspect.
I agree. I would say that depending on the nature again, and depending on the relevancy of the content of the webinar, could dictate when you put it onto YouTube. And again, if you're, like Chris said, if it's lead generation, that's your purpose, then you want to gate them. If you want the identifiable report and analytics, you need to gate them. But even that gated content, it may become out of date or somewhat out of date within 6 months, and that could then be something that you put onto YouTube for that brand exposure, which is exactly what I was going to mention as well, Chris. Gated webinars, 9 times out of 10, the clients that we work with, they do want gated content because it's the leads that they want, not necessarily for lead generation. They want to monitor their and members of their association who are attending certain things. But again, it just depends on the B2B nature of it, the B2C nature of it. It really depends. Mm-hmm. And again, it's about speaking to a specialist who can help qualify what it specifically is that you want them to go with, as opposed to which platform would be best for you.
Completely agree. And if I can just expand a little bit further on this point, when you're going through YouTube and you're missing out on like them key analytics, one of the good things about YouTube though is you can start binging someone's like webinars, and you can really just like get lost in it. But again, you are missing out of like that attendee is really like, they're really keen on you. They're keen, really keen on like the content. Because I was just thinking there, I follow like a lot of sales professionals webinars on YouTube. And if they could see me, like the data and analytics, they'd be like, that is a key guy I need to speak to, because he's really following like what we're selling. He's really understanding our key market. Whereas I think if you go on someone's website and you're just clicking on, you register for one email, you go through all the form, you might feel a bit more, I don't really want to register for the next one or the next one. So just having something like a multi-reg in place can make it a lot more easy for one attendee to really just divulge all that content and really get the most out of it without feeling like there's a hindrance between them from registration to watching the content.
Yeah. Multi-registration webinar libraries, we call our solution a webinar library, but clients can build their own webinar libraries with open content, ungated content on the website as well. So
stuff like that's a game changer.
I think as well though, if you are gating your content, make sure that what you're offering is gonna add value to their life, because if you gate it, they then get access and it's disappointment. Like they're not gonna try to get something else from you. So maybe just keep that one in mind.
I was gonna say don't advertise something as educational and then try and flog your own product. I know we have mentioned products that Workcast sell within this webinar, but it's just because some of that product does fit the answer that we've mentioned. Like I've just mentioned a webinar library, but it is purely dependent on the nature of how you want to gate things, really.
Exactly. Like other people call them content hubs. Like you could go find them. There'll be different versions of it all about. Like Vimeo do their own version of that and things now.
Bright Talk, they do, I think they might still call them channels. But yeah, so there's so many platforms that do them and do it, do their own versions of YouTube. Again, some are gated, some are not. It purely comes down to your requirements. And what I would, the one thing that I would always say when you ask these questions as well is essentially, what are your goals from doing one of these events? What are you trying to achieve? And then work backwards from that. Like, always think about the end goal and work backwards.
I agree. Because if the goal that you're trying to reach to can't be done with webinars, don't do webinars. It'll be a waste of time. You could have put your resources and energy and money somewhere else. I feel like we shouldn't end it by saying don't do webinars.
Well, it's a good point to make, because, you know, if you're a B2C company that you're selling, let's say, for example, you're a clothing company, you're not going to tap into your end customer by running a webinar. I don't watch webinars from my favorite designers, because I'll go straight to their website, because that's where I can see the clothes that I like.
And then buy them.
Yes. So they're best investing their money on the usability of the website, because if that usability isn't good, I am buying. So it's that kind of approach. Just make sure it suits your use case and industry, I think.
100%. I think that's
really use webinars.
Use webinars if they meet your end goal.
Yes.
I feel like that should be our strap line for this. Webinars Unfiltered. Use webinars. Right, on that note, thank you both for joining me here today, and for anyone who's watched this, we will do another little session of Webinars Unfiltered sometime soon, and we hope to see you there. Are we all striking a pose?
Thanks, everyone.